just a few web comments. First of all, this is the first video that really got comments, and I'm happy about it. I think most comments, some are by Nadish, who is not here, and some are by myself, and some are by Conan, who is actually watching it from Northeastern, or Northwestern maybe. So, I'm happy. Though I really think watching the video is less good than coming to class. So I'm happier with the people actually here. Now I also wanted to make a few more web comments and then start with content. So this is Nadish. So if you remember, I asked you how hard it is to determine whether a knot is has a three coloring or not. And so a priori, the only way to find out, well, a priori, you just have to go through all colorings and see if they're good or bad. Okay, so you start coloring somewhere, or you color and then you check. And if you have n arcs, you'll have 3 to the n things to choose from. So maybe you could cut some, but it would at least look exponential on first look. But then Nadish notes that if your colors are 0, 1, and 2 in Z mod 3, then the sum of the colors in every around every crossing is 0, if and only if all 3 colors are the same or all 3 colors are different. So really the question is, you set up a system of equations. The color, so if you have a crossing with arcs A, B, C around it, you call the colors around it SA, SB, and SC, and you set the equation SA plus SB plus SC is equal to 0, and you set such as an equation for each crossing of the knot. And then the question is whether there is a non-trivial solution to this system of equations over Z mod, over Z3. Now, at the end, Nadish wrote something wrong, because he said the nullity of M is non-zero if and only if there is a valid tricoloring of D. Well, the nullity is always zero, because there is always the trivial tricoloring. You can always color everything by the same color. Okay, so the question is not whether the nullity is one, but rather whether it is two or more. Okay, so whether there is a solution other than the trivial solution. So, but it remains a question of Gaussian elimination. You can determine it by Gaussian elimination or by looking at minors and computing a determinant. And anyway, it's a quadratic time question. Since Gaussian elimination is relatively simple, you can do it, especially over a finite field, over Z mod 3, you can do it in relatively quickly. Okay? So this is, oh, and by the way, now that we found the mistake, if I or anybody else wanted to fix it, I'd click edit here and then fix the relevant thing here. I don't think I want to do it right now, but I just wanted to demonstrate that it could be easy. Okay? And then the last web comment for today, before turning off the projector, is that for today and for a little longer, we will be following my rather old paper from 1992 on the Vasiliev knot invariants. You know, it's not that it's such an excellent paper, but I know it very well because I wrote it. So it makes it easier for me to follow. Anyway, you can download it as a PDF file from over here, and I don't know why it's not doing anything. Oh, here it is. Okay? So, and I think at this point I can turn off the projector. plane. Okay. Then the next thing, you see, Nadish, you missed the discussion about your work. So the next thing is yet another embarrassment about the Jones polynomial. So I keep getting the parametrization wrong. The content is right, okay, but I keep getting the parametrization wrong. So let me try to do it right this time. So the Jones polynomial is defined by this is equal to A times the horizontal smoothing plus B, which is really A inverse, times the vertical smoothing, and this is the Kaufman bracket, k cycles go to d to the power k, where d is minus a squared minus a to the negative 2 to the power k. Well, you see, all of these things we have determined on the blackboard, so they can't be wrong. The only thing that can be wrong is the reparametrization that we do at the end. So the reparametrization is the Jones polynomial is negative a cubed to the power the right of a not L or a link L divided, multiplied by the bracket of L divided by the bracket of the not. And then I said substitute a going to q to the fourth, but apparently the substitution that will give you better formulas later on is a going to I times q to the negative 1 over 4. All it means is that certain signs get changed, okay? And actually later, at some point, we will have a class on Chovanov homology, and people doing Chovanov homology do yet another substitution, okay? So part of my confusion is because there are lots of conventions. And the one I want today is this one. But let me just say what it is more clearly. It also says a squared is equal to It's negative q to the negative 1/2. It also says a to the fourth is equal to 1 over q as opposed to q, which is what I said last time. And most interesting, it means that D, the value inside here, becomes, the negatives cancel. So you just get q to the 1/2 plus q to the negative 1/2 raised to the power k. Okay? So I'm sorry about that. Okay. And now on to real content. So I said last time that we seek invariants that are well behaved under algebraic operations. And I said that it turns out that there is an extremely natural candidate. And the natural candidate is the universal polynomial invariant. Polynomial, not in the sense that the Jones polynomial is a polynomial. The Jones polynomial is a polynomial in the sense that its values are polynomials. Okay? What I'm looking for now, or what I want to talk about now, is invariants that can be viewed as if they were polynomials on the space of knots. Okay, so these would be numerical invariants with values in, say, the real numbers, or I don't know, something, or the rational numbers, but they should be viewed as if they are polynomials. They grow polynomially in some sense on the space of knots. Okay, so this is what I mean by a that's how I will define a polynomial invariant. And then we will be looking for the universal polynomial invariant. The universal polynomial invariant will probably come up later today or maybe just on the next class, and we'll start by defining what it means to be polynomial. Okay? So what's a polynomial? The idea, in Rn, a polynomial is something that vanishes when you differentiate it, so a polynomial of degree n is something that vanishes if you differentiate it n plus 1 times. Okay? Alternatively, you could be talking about differences rather than derivatives. So a sequence is a polynomial sequence if when you take its iterated differences, it eventually becomes 0. Right? So, I don't know, the sequence 1, 4, 9, 16, 25, 36, right? These are the powers of the natural numbers. It becomes, it's a polynomial, and you can see it by taking differences. 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, and then the next difference would be 2, 2, 2, 2, and the next line of differences is 0, 0, 0, and the fact that it vanishes eventually means that it's a polynomial. So I will set up a similar definition for knots. Okay? So, okay. So given any invariant V, which is an invariant of knots, and you know, I'm saying knots, but really it could be other types of knotted objects as well, and we will use it later on. In particular, we will use probably already today links instead of knots. So a knot is when you have one component, a link is when you have several. Okay? So with values inside A, where A is any abelian group, and to be precise about what I mean by knots, I mean oriented knots. So knots that come with a direction along their parametrization. And in fact, I will, well, I'm always assuming R3 to be oriented, but let me just say it explicitly, in an oriented copy of the of three space, of Euclidean space. Okay? We can extend, V to knots with a single exception, so a single double point. By setting let's call it V up 1 of a knot with a double point, and again, as always, when I draw a piece of a knot, I mean extend it in some way to a complete knot. And again, strictly speaking, this is not a knot. This is a knot with one singular point. Okay? So, in fact, this will be called a one singular knot. When you have a double point, there are two natural ways of resolving it. You can resolve it to be an overcrossing, so you can perturb it a little bit so that it becomes an overcrossing, or you can perturb it a little bit so that it becomes an undercrossing. So you can define it to be V of the over resolution minus V of the under resolution. And you know, maybe I should have called it, instead of V up 1, I should have called it V prime. Okay? Because this is the parallel of taking the first derivative. You just take a difference. Okay? But then you can continue. So if you have, so now, if a certain knot K is two singular, so two singular just means that it has two double points, and the two can be far away from each other. Okay, so I'm writing them as if they're separated. You can set V up 2 of K, or V up 2 of the knot with two double points to be V up 1 of, well, you take one of the double points and resolve it in the two possible ways. So the first double point becomes remains, and the second one becomes an overcrossing minus V up 1 of this is a double point now, and this is an undercrossing. Okay? Now, why is it well defined? Okay? So, the double points were not given, were not ordered to start with. So, why does it not matter which double point I used first in order to, well, which one I resolved first? And the sort of abstract answer, not the abstract answer, the calculus analogy answer is that this is the parallel of the statement partial derivatives commute. Okay? This is kind of the derivative in one direction, this is the derivative in another direction, and in calculus you know the partial derivatives commute. In fact, why do partial derivatives commute in calculus? So they commute because lots of epsilons and deltas, okay? But behind the lots of epsilons and deltas, there is also a simple combinatorial reasoning. And the simple combinatorial reasoning is that, well, if you have a function of two variables, say, the derivative in one direction, in the x direction, would mean that you take the difference of its value here with its value here. So you take the value here minus the value here. The derivative in the second direction, well, now you take the derivative of this. Well, that would mean that you take the difference of having a plus here and a minus here with what is written here. So you take this and multiply it by another minus sign. So you get a pattern like that. So the second derivative of a function is up to many epsilons and deltas and taking limits and so on, it's to take the function and evaluate it at the four corners of a square with signs as given here, and you can check that if you do it in the other order, you get the same pattern. And that's why the partial derivatives commute. So, same reasoning works here. The bottom line is that V up 2 of two double crossings will be a sum with signs of V evaluated on the knots that you get by resolving these two double points in the four different ways that you can do it. Okay? Now let's continue. So, likewise, you can define V up M of a knot with exactly m double points to be, well, you can define it either inductively using picking one of the double points and resolving it and using vm minus 1, or alternatively, as I said before, you can think of it as the sum of the 2 to the m resolutions. So let's call this knot K. So it's the 2 to the m resolutions K prime of K, where you replace each of the crossings by either an over or an under, of V, the original invariant evaluated on K prime, but taken with signs, and the sign is, well, every time you take an undercrossing, you get a minus sign. So the sign will be minus 1 to the number of undercrossing. So minus 1 to the number of under resolutions. Okay? And it's clearly well defined. Anyway, definition. And now we come to the key definition, the one single most important definition in this class. So definition, V is of type M, or sometimes Vasiliev of type M, because Viktor Vasiliev, and in fact Viktor Vasiliev and Misha Gusarov were the first to study this notion, but somehow the name Vasiliev stuck with it better. Or sometimes it just said, it's just called V is of finite type, and then of type M. Okay? So V is of type M if it's like a polynomial of degree M. If V, its M plus first derivative, is identically equal to zero. Okay? Or alternatively, so to be honest, you know, I've really used this superscript notation only to remind you of calculus. In reality, people usually don't bother stating the putting the superscript, because it is superfluous. Because you know which superscript to put by counting how many double points you have in the input. Okay? So I could just write it without the superscript, and I could say that V vanishes whenever the input has M plus 1, or in fact it doesn't have to be M plus 1, any number more than M of double points. Okay? Now, maybe I'll say a little bit more of theoretical things before giving examples. Is this fair? Is this okay? So, the method of study, or one approach to studying this, would be to study the nth derivative. The point is that if you have a polynomial of degree m, let's say differently, if you have two polynomials of degree m and they have the same mth derivative, then their difference is a polynomial of degree m minus 1. Okay? So you study polynomials of degree m. So, and let's assume that we've studied things by induction, so we already understand polynomials of degree m minus 1. So if you want to sort of figure out what's new in degree m, it's enough to look at the nth derivatives. So instead of looking at the invariants themselves, we will look at their nth derivatives. Okay? So, definition. So, given V of type M, I will set V, or I'll set W sub V, the so-called weight system. So the name is weight system for some odd historical reason. Maybe at some point later I will state, but it's really the nth derivative. So I will set W sub V. I will let W sub V to be the nth derivative of V. But what is it really? It's a function from Km. So what's Km? Km, by definition, will be the set of all m singular knots into the original abelian group that we've used. Oh, I should have said, right, everything was over an arbitrary abelian group, and everything makes sense over an arbitrary abelian group. The only thing I need is subtraction. Okay? Now, in calculus, if you look at the nth derivative of a polynomial of degree m, it is constant. Well, in fact, it's not a constant, because if you have a polynomial, you know, if you have a polynomial on a high-dimensional Euclidean space, then there are many, many, many nth derivatives. You can pick many directions. So it's not a single constant, it's a system of constants. Okay? So this should be, in some sense, a system of constants. Okay? But where do I see the fact that it's a constant? Well, I claim that it's a constant in the sense that it no longer sees topology. Meaning, it descends to the quotient of Km by the relation which says that an overcrossing, I always get it wrong, an overcrossing is equal to an undercrossing. Why so? Well, what is V up M evaluated on a knot which has M double points, and a single additional, right, it must have M double points if I am to evaluate it on V up M, and a single additional overcrossing. Well, take the difference between this and the same V evaluated on the same knot with M double points and replace this overcrossing by an undercrossing. And by definition, this is V, or V up M plus 1, evaluated on, well, the difference between an over and an under is just a double point. So this is V evaluated on something with M plus 1 double points, which by our assumption that V is of type M is equal to 0. So therefore, these two things are equal to each other, as I've stated here. Okay? Now, let's call Km modulo this relation. Let's call it dm. And the reason I call it dm is because d stands for diagrams. And I want to tell you which diagrams I'm talking about. Okay? So, claim, which I will prove in a minute, is that this is the space of, or this is equal to the space of so-called chord diagram. A chord diagram is an oriented circle along with M chords marked on it. So I must have exactly M chords. Okay? And this is regarded as a combinatorial object. So two such chord diagrams are equal if they are graph theoretically equal by a map of graphs that preserves the external circle along with its orientation. Okay? Said differently, if you can rotate one so and put it on top of the other so that the chords match. Okay? So it's a combinatorial gadget. In fact, it's terribly difficult to count how many such chord diagrams there are. There is a finite number. So by the way, if once I prove this equality, so this is just a claim at the moment, but once I prove this equality, it will follow that there are at most finitely many, so maybe zero at the moment, but there are at most finitely many finite type invariants of any given type, of type n, right? Because up to invariants of lower type, an invariant of type m is determined by its weight system. In analogy with polynomials, and you can show it here with equal amount of ease, a weight system is a function on this set, which is equivalent to this set, which is finite. Okay? Sorry, and when I say finitely many, I mean in the linear algebraic sense. So the vector space, or more precisely, the A module of finite type invariants of type M is of finite rank. Or the vector space, if A was a field, then the vector space is finite dimensional. Okay? So, I still have to explain or to prove this claim. So, let's do it here. Proof of the claim saying Km modulo this is equal to Dm. Well, I need to construct maps going this way, both ways. Okay? So how do I go this way? Well, whenever you have an M singular knot, you can think you are an ant walking on this knot. Okay, so you don't see R3, you only see, well, a piece of wire in front of you. Okay, so you only see a circle. Okay, so I don't know, maybe I'll start with some M singular knot. All my knots are always the trefoil because it's the only knot I know how to draw. Here is a two singular knot. I took the trefoil and I made it two singular. Okay? So as an ant, I start somewhere, let's say here, and I walk around. All I see is a circle. Except along the circle, occasionally I go through a special point where I can see that something is different because I can see a singularity. So every time I go through a singularity, I deposit a little chemical marker, okay? So that next time that I go through it, I know about it, okay? So I deposit the chemical marker 1 on the first singularity, and in my imagination of the world, which is going to be just a circle, I've deposited 1 somewhere. Okay, I started here, I've deposited 1 here. Then I keep going and I deposit a 2. So I deposit a 2 here. And then I keep going and oops, I meet 1 once again, but I didn't come on the same, I meet the point 1 once again, but I came from it to it from a different direction this time. Okay? So I've marked the point 1 once again. And really, the fact that these two points, that one is marked twice, really means that these two points are identified in the image. So in the parameter space, they're different points, but in the image inside R3, they're the same. So as a good ant, I mark the fact that I've identified them by putting a chord between them. Okay? And then I keep going and I go through 2 once again. And again, I mark the fact that I identify these points in the target space by adding a chord. Okay? So this is the map. It's clearly well defined. Okay? clearly, if you flip crossings somewhere in the knot, well, the ant will not even see that. Okay? So, right, the ant doesn't care about crossings. The ant only sees its immediate surroundings, the immediate surroundings of the strand. Okay? So it's clearly well defined. Okay? You know, let's do another example just for fun. So, oops, I'm contradicting myself here. I've just drawn another two singular knot. But this one is so easy that I can do it. So what's the ant's view of this singular knot? Well, the order by which I go through the double points is 1, 1, 2, 2. Okay? So 1, 1, 2, 2, and I have this core diagram. Okay? Now I claim that this map is onto. Okay? Or to say differently, I claim that given any core diagram, I can find a knot, a singular knot, representing it. So how do I do that? Well, give me a core diagram. So now let's go the other map. So give me a core diagram. Let's take this one. I'm going to number the chords, so it doesn't really matter. The numbering is just for my own temporary reference. I will erase it at the end. Just like here, actually I should have said it, at the end of the process the ant erases the numbers. The numbers are irrelevant. They're your temporary constructs. So I number the chords. Let's call them 1, 2, 3, and 4. Okay? And then I say, well, each such chord must correspond to a singular point in R3. Right? So I take 4 singular points in R3, and I just embed them in some way. Okay? So let's call this one 1, this one 2, this one 3, this one 4. Okay? And then, well, I actually have a little bit of further information here. Okay? So in each chord, I have, well, sort of a little bit of a little neighborhood of this chord. Okay? So, you know what? Let me say it differently. Let me also mark the arcs along the big circle by some numbering. So let me call this one 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Okay? Then chord number 1 connects 1 to 2, so, and also 4 to 5. 4 to 5. Chord number 2 is between 2 and 3 on one side, and between 7 and 8 on the other side. Chord number 3 is between 3 and 4, and 6 and 7. And chord number 4 is between 5 and 6. And 8 and 1. 8 and 1. Okay. Now I have to turn it into an embedding that has no further singularities. Well, I just do what I must do. Okay, so one, this arc must be connected to the one over here. I connect it in any way I want. Okay? In R3, all ways of connecting it or connecting the two are equivalent. Okay? Then I need to connect the 2 or the piece of 2 that's near 1 to the piece of 2 that's near 2. Okay, so in other words, I need to connect this 2 to this 2, so I connect them. Oh, I could have connected them in other ways in R3. So instead of going this way, I could have gone up here and then down back again. Topologically, it's not equivalent. But topologically, modulo being able to flip crossings, it is equivalent. In other words, if you want, I could embed, I place these points along a line on the blackboard, because first of all, the blackboard is two-dimensional, and then it was convenient to put it on a line. But I could put these points in generic position in R, positions in R3, and then I could always just connect by straight lines, and if somebody else had chosen to connect by non-straight lines, I could straighten the lines and just pull them tight. Pull these lines to be tight, like make it a straight line, and this is supposed to be straight. And as you tighten it, you may have to cross lines that's already there, but this is legal because we're in this quotient. Okay? And let's just keep going. So I connect 4 to where 4 needs to be, and it doesn't matter how. I connect 5 to the other 5, and I've chosen to go under, but I could have just as well chosen to go over. Then I connect 6 to 6, and 7 to 7, and 8 to 8, and here you go. Okay, so it came up a messy knot, but the point, but it doesn't matter. Okay, it comes out the same knot, modulo this relation, no matter what I do. Are you with me?
The KM, yes. Has a, you have it modded out by the Riedemeisters, right? For it to equal DM.
So I was never specific about what an M singular knot is. So it's a topological gadget for me, even though I've never gone through the topology precisely. Okay, so this is the part where I say where I will remain imprecise. Okay, so for me, a knot or a singular knot is the same no matter how you deform it, and I was never precise and will never be precise about what exactly makes a legitimate topological deformation. But you could, you know, if you really wanted, you could make it precise. You could say an M singular knot is a smooth embedding, or a smooth almost embedding of a circle into R3, in which you have finitely many, in which you're allowed to have finitely many transverse double points, and modulo smooth homotopies of such things.
But then don't you have relations for D?
Once I say multiples of such things, it means that I can do, that I can deform it whichever way I want. Okay?
But then won't you have the 4T relations for D? Like, it's not equal. Is it? Am I wrong?
Oh, you know too much.
But you say equal.
It is equal. I've just proved that it's equal. This space is equal to that space. What I didn't say yet, okay, so I said that every type M invariant has an nth derivative, which is a functional on core diagrams. I didn't say that every functional on core diagrams comes from an invariant. We will later see that there are more relations that functionals on DM have to satisfy if you want them to come from invariants. Okay? So, okay, all I said is that this space is equal, well, again, I didn't say that there are no further relations that W sub V has to satisfy. In fact, it satisfies more relations. Okay? But in particular, all I said was that given a type N invariant, it defined the functional on core diagonal with N chords. Maybe this functional satisfies more relations. In fact, for all we know, so far we could be talking about the empty theory, because I haven't given a single example. So for all we know, it could be that V has to be zero, therefore W sub V has to be zero. Therefore, this functional on core diagrams is always zero. So you could set all core diagrams to be zero. So far it could be, it may be. Okay? Well, but you know, if this will be the case, then it's going to be a boring class. So let me try to convince you that this isn't the case. Did I answer your question, Karin? Okay. So I better give an example, and I'll give more than one example at once. Okay, so theorem. So take the Jones polynomial of a knot k, and it's a function of q. I told you how it is a function of q. Okay? But instead of q, make a substitution and put q equals e to the x. So replace q by e to the x. Now expand it as a power series in e to the x, right? So it was a Laurent polynomial in q. You know, things like q to the 5 minus q to the 3 plus q to the negative 2. Okay? Substitute e to the x, you get e to the 5x minus e to the 3x plus e to the negative 2x. And this you can expand as a power series of in x. So just write it in the form sum of jn, so I'll call the nth coefficient j sub n. Okay? So jn, times x to the n. But of course, since j depends on k, j sub n also depends on k. Right, you have a different power series expansion for each knot. Furthermore, J sub n is clearly an invariant of knots because it's defined from J, which is an invariant. Okay? So J sub n is a function which goes from knots into, well, the coefficient. It turns out that the coefficients are always integer, but you know, if you really don't want if you want, you can put here r or q, I don't care. But it's a function going into z. Okay? So far I've only introduced j sub n, and now the claim of the theorem is that in this case, jn is of type n. So we've already checked that the Jones polynomial is non-trivial. In fact, we found that in the first 250 knots, it gets 243 different values, I think. Something like that. So it's a rather strong invariant. Now, if you have a function and you know its Taylor expansion, you know the function. Okay? So the JNs contain all the information to recover J. So not only we have finite type invariants, we have many of them and they are powerful. Okay, they are at least as powerful as the Jones polynomial. Okay? So, proof. Oh, I think the proof actually will come after the break, right? Yes, so proof after the break.